Reed Detmers is going to be on the hill. This could be perhaps a time for him to break out. Just a little tapper to Rendon.
Boy, you love that. Out front, soft contact.
Drives it center field. Mike Trout has an eye on it and squeezes it. Gets a ground ball. Oh, this could be two. The throw down to second. What a play. Jaron Walsh steps on first. Throws down to Velasquez. Gets Walls and Reed Detmers gets out of the inning. Fly ball. That's popped up. Who wants it? Renifo calls for it. The crowd's behind Reed Detmers right now. He has gone 8 innings and has not allowed a hit. Ground ball. Velasquez throws across. He's got it! Reed Detmers throws a no-hitter! Truly incredible, amazing, Mark.
Welcome back to the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello, joined as always by MLB.com National Content Editor Matt Myers. Today is Thursday, May 12th. We have a lot of stuff to get into. We are about a month into the season, so we're going to talk about the changes in playoff odds. You can actually affect your entire season in the first month. It's true. I'm looking at you, Boston. We're going to get into our three-batter minimum, where we're going to talk about how Justin Verlander is having an incredible bounce-back season. I don't think we're talking enough about the Diamondbacks are actually competent, which is cool. They're doing some really interesting things on the pitching staff. And Mike Trout, who you may have heard of, is off to his best ever start, which just seems deeply unfair that there's another level for Mike Trout to get into. And then Matt and I are each going to talk about our guy that you should be talking about more. And I got to be honest, I'm so excited about my guy. I've been pestering Matt for weeks about my guy. I kind of want to just skip ahead and do my guy, but I'm not. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to wait until we get into our finest Italian minor leaguer. I'm very excited about this.
That's quite a teaser.
It's going to be so great. No bias here, by the way, from someone who's from New Jersey and name ends with O. Nope, not from me. Listen, we're like a month and, I don't know, 4 days into the season, and it's still early. Like, it clearly is early. You see guys who are very good with like 7 ERAs, and you see guys who are hitting, you know, 410, and that's not going to happen. But I guess the old saying goes, you can't win a division in April, but you sure can lose it. And that's kind of what I was thinking when I went over to Fangraphs and I looked at the playoff odds, right? And what you can do is you can compare their preseason projections versus what's happened now. And you can say, well, who has increased or decreased their odds? And obviously it doesn't guarantee anything. You can be off to a great start and still blow it. You know, the Red Sox, for example, could still make a charge. I think we've learned that the last couple of years. The Braves were what? Not above 500 till like August last year. The 2019 Nationals were terrible for the first 2 months. Like, you know, things can happen, but these wins and losses matter. So that's what I want to do to start. I want to look at the three teams that have increased their playoff odds by the most and the three teams that have cost themselves the most in playoff odds. And I got to be honest, when I looked at the three teams that have added the most, I was a little surprised at first to see that the Yankees were not on there because the Yankees are off to a great start. But I say that just to remind everybody, the Yankees were always projected to be good. If you start off at a very high level and then you play great, there's really only so much, you know, upward motion you can possibly have. So remember that, right? The Dodgers can't go up because how do you go above 100% more or less? The team that's the most juiced here, let's say in playoff odds, I think won't be surprising. That's the Angels. They have added 36 percentage points to their playoff odds. They are now at 78%. That's right. A nearly 8 in 10 chance that America's longest and saddest playoff drought. I'm sorry, Mariners. I'm talking about Mike Trout and now Shohei Ohtani will end. And I'm excited about this. I'm not an Angels fan. I don't care about the Angels, but if this is the year we get Trout and Ohtani in the playoffs, sign me up. You heard a little bit of Reed Detmers, no hitter. I guess what's the right question here, Matt? In or out, I guess in.
I think so, especially we have to keep reminding ourselves also there is a sixth playoff team in each league. And, you know, Will Leach wrote a piece about this week on MLB.com. It's like it's already time to start. We kind of have to rethink how we think about the playoff and the playoff races, you know, not just the extra playoff spot, but also how, like, you know, the stratification, the three tiers of like two teams get a bye, next two teams host all three wildcard games, next two teams on the road for all three wildcard games. But that's kind of a separate conversation. The Angels, we've touched on them a couple of times. Yeah, I'm in. I mean, they're 21 and 12. in the American League, only the Yankees have a better run differential. I think that's like kind of the big tell. We talked a little bit last week about how they have like a credible starting three this year. And that didn't even include Reed Detmers, who, as you heard in the opening, just threw a no-hitter this week. I'm not sure how good Reed Detmers is. He only struck out two. His expected stats aren't that great, but he was a first round, the number 10 overall pick 2 years ago. I enjoy watching him from an aesthetic standpoint just because he throws a lot of curveballs and just like you don't see as many like starting pitchers these days who are like kind of fastball curveball. It almost reminded me watching like a young Barry Zito. But the big jump for them is Taylor Ward in addition to starting pitching. Like Taylor Ward suddenly hitting like, you know, like an extra Mike Trout basically in their lineup. And he seems to be real-ish. You know, I mean, the quality of contact is incredible. So I'm in.
Yeah, I think I was looking back at like some of the unexpectedly good teams of the last couple of years, and every one of them had a guy you did not expect to be there. You know, like maybe that's a Max Muncy type or half of the Giants last year. And Taylor Ward really seems like that guy. Here's the thing. I think I'm in. I think I'm a believer. But they are, as of this morning, one half game up on the Houston Astros. And as we sit here recording on Thursday afternoon, the Astros are up 11-3 in the eighth inning of the finishing yesterday's suspended game. So they've also got another game to play later on today. If they win that game, the Angels will now be in second place, right? And I'm not going to worry too much about first or second place here on, you know, May 12th. But it's just kind of a reminder that the Astros are still really good. We'll get into them a little bit later in terms of Verlander. And that goes to your point of like the expanded playoffs. I think you're going to help them a lot. You know what I mean? Like you might need that extra wild card spot. I still think one of the other teams in the American League East is just going to go nuts. Like the White Sox might come back. And if the Angels end up getting in because of that extra wild card spot, I will not look at it as a, oh, this doesn't count. I'll look at it as a great, wonderful. I didn't even really like the expanded playoffs, right? But if you can get Mike Trout into the playoffs, I think it's a great idea. And we're gonna dive deeply into Mike Trout a little bit later. All right, the second team, I think this one's interesting. San Francisco is way up. They are up by 28 percentage points. They are now 76%. San Francisco is in a very weird division. They are 19-12. They are one of five teams in the National League West, which has five teams, that are over 500, which is just the weirdest thing. And they've had a weird start to the season, I think, because they've had a lot of injuries, right? Like every single day I look at their lineup and it's like, you're not sure who some of these guys are. And obviously they've earned the benefit of the doubt on that. And I think what's happening to them is sort of the opposite of the Yankees, which is that the projections were not necessarily crediting them for last year as much as you might think, because, you know, who could look at a 107 win season like that and think, oh yeah, they're definitely going to do it again. And like, I didn't think they were going to do it again, but I thought they'd be for real. And I think that's what's happening. Like they're off to a good start. They're seven games over 500, even though they had a lot of guys being injured. And I think they're going to stick around. And so I buy this. They're not the Dodgers, right? They're not going to beat the Dodgers, but they now have a 76% playoff odds, which again, in the expanded postseason, makes it a little easier. And I think that makes sense. And I'm just kind of glad to see them getting the credit that they've very clearly deserved and earned over the last year.
And it's also, I mean, I think it's also, I mean, there's just like, I will admit, I've sort of been skeptical about the Giants for two straight years. I'm no longer skeptical. I just think they're good. Even if I look at the names on their roster and I'm sort of like, but like, it's a good team. You know, they're obviously, they're getting like the good Jock Peterson, but I think they're a team that knows how to get, you know, the best out of players. They've pretty clearly proven that. Brandon Belt is again putting up a really good season, kind of quietly. You wrote about him earlier this season. You know, Austin Slater's raking. It's just like, it's a team top to bottom that's just really deep and knows how to get the most out of their players. It's almost like Rays West in that, like, but it, I think it's almost with mid-career guys instead of young guys. They're sort of figuring out how to like put together this collection where it's like, whatever, the total is greater than the sum of the parts. Like, it just, for the second straight year, they're doing this again. Not to mention the fact they added Carlos Rodon, who, you know, might, you know, win the NL Cy Young when all's said and done. But it's, I stopped doubting the Giants at the end of last year, and I'm continued to no longer doubt them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Going into the at the end of last season, their rotation was basically in shambles, just in the sense that, yes, Logan Webb looked like he'd be great and he's back, but everybody else was a free agent, like literally everybody. And they brought back Wood and they brought back DeSclafani, but they lost Kevin Gausman, who was fantastic and has continued to be fantastic for the Blue Jays. And, you know, how do you replace Kevin Gausman? You can't possibly do that. Oh, look, a Carlos Rodon has fallen into our laps because the White Sox, for the second time in 18 months, decided not to offer him a contract. Which is I've got so many thoughts on that. Yeah, he's looked great, obviously. And I think the Giants will get better as they get healthier. Not that counting on Rodon to stay healthy all season long is like a good bet to make. But I think that they are trending in the right direction, and they've clearly proven that things are going well. And the third team that is adding a lot of playoff odds, and I think this will be a surprise to absolutely nobody, your New York Mets, who have added 18 percentage points and are now 88% to make the playoffs. That's partially because they're playing very well. And it's partially because the NL East is sort of the opposite of the NL West in that all of the other teams look terrible right now. And, you know, you expected that from Washington. I was never that high in Miami. The Braves and the Phillies are just, it's not happening right now. So I want to remind everybody, the Mets are still the Mets. There are innumerable ways that this could go wrong. But also, Jacob DeGrom hasn't even played for them yet. And man, that's a good spot to be in a month into the season.
What I'll say about the Mets is I still believe the race between them and the Braves will end up being close. I think Acuna will finally get going in a play. He hasn't even been playing every day yet, and he actually, you know, kind of tweaked his groin again. I think they will get in the groove. It'll be a close race. As a someone, a avid viewer of the Mets, I will say the one thing that like is noticeable, and like the game they played against the Nationals on Monday night, I guess it was Tuesday night now, it was like a 4-2 win, but there was like four or five plays in the game where it was like, as you know, Keith Hernandez would say, good fundies, where they actually had like a fantastic relay play. They threw out D. Gordon stealing in a key spot. They like took advantage. Did you know Juan Soto kind of has a pretty weak arm? I didn't really realize it till watching this game, but they like ran wild on him in right field. And it was like, it was what you would sort of see with like the what people would give credit to Buck Showalter is like noticeable in ways like that. And that's sort of why I'm like a little more confident in them at least making the playoffs, but I do not think they're going to like run away from the division.
I did not know Juan Soto had a weakish arm, and I refuse to believe it because there is nothing on a baseball field that Juan Soto is not fantastic at. So I refute that, and I refute you. All right, the three teams that are headed downward. Let's start with the bottom. Who's surprised that the Red Sox have completely tanked their playoff odds? They are 44 percentage points down from where they were. They now stand at 19%. They are 11-20. Trevor Story hit his first home run the other day, yesterday maybe. So that's nice. But I can't remember how you felt about them. I was out on them to start the year. I didn't trust their pitching at all, so I did not have them as a playoff team. They have wildly underperformed that, although, you know, Evaldi's been pretty good and Waka's been pretty good. But what is happening with this team? And when are they going to start? What did I joke to you the other day? How good will JD Martinez look in a Milwaukee uniform? Because, man, that's where this is headed.
In a 16 playoff world, I thought they were going to be the sixth team. I would have taken them ahead of the Angels or Twins for that sort of final spot in my mind. In preseason, I thought that it would be like four AL East teams, the White Sox and the Astros making the playoffs, just to give you a sense. I would have had them as like the fifth or sixth team in the AL, but like the hitting just hasn't been there. You said Story just hit his first home run. They're not walking at all. Dalbec's been bad. Obviously, we knew the pitching was – the thought was, oh, they will outscore teams. They're going to score so many runs. That just hasn't happened at all in a way that like at this point – feels like a little like could be a problem. And I think like they are going to be fascinating at the trade deadline. They've got, as you mentioned, JD Martinez is a free agent. Nathan Eovaldi, I'm pretty sure, is a free agent. Xander Bogaerts can opt out of his contract at the end of the season. And this is a team that has, there's no team that's had more of a roller coaster the last 15 years than them. They're either like winning the World Series or they're finishing in last place, right? Like they're not, I don't think the ownership is afraid to finish in last place. And if Chaim Bloom is like, hey, we need to jumpstart this rebuild. We're going to just rebuild this team around Devers right now. We're going to make him the cornerstone. We should trade these guys to try and like really jumpstart that. I could totally see it happening.
I saw someone write, and I can't remember who it was. It might have been Jim Bowden or somebody, that Xander Bogaerts would be a perfect trade candidate for the Cardinals. And I'm thinking to myself, no, he's already been traded to the Angels. What are you talking about? Like, that's clearly where he's going to go. Yeah, like I said, I was not high in this team to start with. They had a lot of issues, and those issues have really exacerbated herself. The team that has cost themselves the second most amount of playoff odds would be the Phillies. They are down 24 percentage points. They are now 36%. I'm pretty sure I did have the Phillies taking one of the postseason spots. Also pretty sure I did not have the Mets doing it. So remember, never listen to anyone's projections because none of us know what we're talking about. The Phillies are weird because, like, you know, they were built around, we're going to slug the ball and we're not going to worry about playing defense. And I don't think the defense has been as bad as I thought it would be. You know, like there were early troubles for Alex Bohm at third, but he's been better, right? The outfield hasn't been that bad. It hasn't helped that Bryce Harper has been DHing. So now you have to have Castellanos and Schwarber both in the outfield. But it also hasn't helped that Kyle Schwarber is hitting 185. So you have that. They do not have a center fielder. Like they almost literally do not possess a center fielder. And like the infield's been hitting pretty well. Bohm has been fine. You know, Hoskins has been better. Segura has been great. And I just look at this team and it's kind of the same way I thought it was before. There's so many things I like about this team, like a lot. And I just, they just don't fit together well. You know, there's no metric for this. I hate to like go gut feel here, but I do not like the fit of this roster together.
I mean, it only works if all those guys are mashing. And as you said, I think it's like it's a pretty big problem that Bryce Harper has to DH. He is like a notably better defender than either Schwarber or Castellanos. And sort of one of the ideas of building this team was like, oh, we can hide one of those guys at DH, Castellanos or Schwarber at DH every night. And like, now you can't. Like that actually, I mean, it's a small thing, but it adds up when it's like every night, right? That they're both in the outfield every night. Like that's pretty significant in my mind. So it was always going to be a weird fit that was relied on that very specific, you know, structure working out. And right now it hasn't, especially when you factor in Schwarber not really hitting.
Yeah. And the final team that's dropped a lot of playoff odds interested in me, the Miami Marlins. They were never high to begin with. They were at 30%. They're now at 14%. Drop of 16 points is the third largest in baseball. I think what's happening here, so they're 14 and 17. There are, let's see, one, two, there are eight teams in the National League that are over 500, and the Marlins are not one of them. So that's a good place to start. And we haven't really talked much about them this year, but they've had a couple of starting pitchers who have been unbelievably good. Like Pablo Lopez has been fantastic. He has allowed 4 earned runs in 6 starts, which is about as well as anybody can pitch. And I think anybody who enjoys the sport of baseball was hoping that Jazz Chisholm would put it together, and it kind of looks like he is. Like, he is pounding the ball. He's got a slugging percentage of over 600, which I don't necessarily buy from him long term. But, you know, him aside, coming into the year, I would have said, hey, I like the starting pitching. I don't trust the offense. And looking at it now, yes. Like, has anything changed there for you?
No, not really. I mean, I also think some of that drop in playoff odds is probably a little bit of a response. Like, you know, the Mets kind of jumping out to a big lead of them is probably like those two things are very much in contrast, because those are two teams that would have been very much competing for the same piece of the pie. So I think that's a factor. I mean, I'd still put them, you know, the Rockies and D-backs are still above 500. I would definitely put the Marlins.
Yes.
I would predict that they would finish ahead of those teams. But it was more like, oh, the Marlins are going to need to finish ahead of like the Mets and probably the Cardinals to kind of make the playoffs. And like that seems unlikely at this point, but not out of the realm of possibility. But the offense outside of Chisholm was always going to be you really were like, are we going to get the best version of Jorge Soler and the best version of Avisel Garcia? And Avisel Garcia has not been good at all.
No, they're kind of getting the worst versions of those guys. Like even within the context of offense being down, Garcia has a 532 OPS and Soler has a 618 OPS. And that's not going to cut it. I want to ask you, of these three teams, right, Miami, Philly, Boston, is there any one of them that you think has a shot to get back into a playoff race?
I think I would – that's a good question. Probably Philly, just because I think that offense could be – because Bohm has actually really started to hit, and I think that the offense could be pretty dangerous, but they really need to get, like, both Wheela and Nola, like – cooking, and that hasn't really happened either. I think Wheeler's been on the COVID IL. It's just like hasn't really come, and he started with shoulder. He started late because of shoulder. So it's like, I think they probably have the highest ceiling of those teams right now. I also think that, like, I do believe the I don't know if they're going to blow it up, but I think the Red Sox are going to be sellers.
Yeah, I think they have to be. I also would have said the Phillies, by the way. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast, and we will talk about Justin Verlander and the incredible thing he's doing. We're back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. Justin Verlander looks like Justin Verlander again. And, you know, it shouldn't be shocking to anyone to say, hey, guaranteed slam dunk Hall of Famer, one of the best pitchers of his generation, is pitching well. He's 39 years old and he's coming off pretty serious elbow surgery. If you don't remember his trajectory of the last couple of years, in 2019, at 36 years old, he threw 258 and a third innings, combining regular season and postseason, which in today's game is just an astronomical number to think about. 258 and a third innings. ... And then what happened? The next year, he threw 6 innings on opening day and he blew out his elbow. Missed the rest of 2020 with Tommy John surgery, missed all of last year. recovering from Tommy John surgery. Now, this year, he's 39 years old, 6 starts, 7 runs. He is allowed, and this is true, 4 hits per 9 innings, which, again, I know offense is down, but also, oh my God, a 155 ERA. And he just sort of looks like a lot like he used to in some ways. The velocity is there, you know, similar to what it's always been. The pitch types are there. He's not, you know, reinvented himself as a junk baller or anything like that. I did notice that his strikeout rate is down a little bit. You know, 25% is still above league average. It's good. It would be his lowest since 2015. I just kind of wanted to like play this out. Hypothetically, let's say he gets to 100 innings and he's doing the same thing he is now. And you go back over the last 50 years, that would be the, you know, fifth or so best season by age 39 pitcher. And we're talking like Nolan Ryan, who's, I think, a pretty good comp. Gaylord Perry and Phil Niekro are very different kind of guys. But this is a guy who I think had earned first ballot Hall of Fame entrance like 5 years ago. And he's talked about wanting to pitch into this 40s. And if he's going to do this, who's going to bet against him? I'm not going to.
No, because I think, like, I mean, what's interesting about him are a few things. You know, as you noted, the strikeouts are down. He almost threw a no-hitter the other night, only had 5 strikeouts. His start before that, he only had 3 strikeouts. And while the velocity is, you know, basically the same on his four-seam fastball, he was always like one of these like high spin rate guys on his four-seamer, like over 2,500, which is a lot. Basically, 2,500 RPM is sort of like for a starting pitcher. You know, some relievers you'll see get up in 2,600. For a starter to maintain 2,500 on the four-seam, that's usually where you get like the real, that's like the high spin guys that get a lot of swings and misses on the four-seam up in the zone. His spin rate is down 200 RPMs, which is significant because his vertical movement is also down on his fastball. And that kind of, to me, sort of explains where the strikeouts are going. He's not, you know, he's not getting these swings and misses on his four-seam like he used to. Obviously, last year they changed the rules on sticky stuff, and we saw a lot of pitchers have to change their repertoires to adjust to that. I don't know if he's in that bucket, but like he didn't pitch last year, so we don't really know what to expect. So we didn't see that like start before, start after comparison. That said, and we talked about this with Noah Syndergaard last week, and I think that Verlander is obviously a much better pitcher with a much better track record of just like, he knows what he's doing, especially with the ball not carrying. He knows how to command the ball. I could see him being a guy who just is able to like use his smarts combined with his stuff and his savvy to just keep the ball in the park and kind of make himself a slightly different pitcher at this stage in his career, and he still can dominate.
Yeah, it is interesting because I was looking at him in 2019. You know, his best pitch by Statcast run values was his slider, right? Four-seamer was very good. His four-seamer is always very good. But his slider was really the pitch in 2019. And if you look at it this year, slider's just been okay. Curveball's been decent. But his four-seamer has been one of the most valuable in the game, despite, as you said, not quite having the rise and the movement. And as I think I've said before, you sort of wonder if guys like this who really, like, quote-unquote, know how to pitch see that the ball isn't traveling as much as it did in the past, then are just going to pound the strike zone with their fastballs and say, okay, go ahead, see what you can do. And I think that's going to be something interesting to track as this season unfolds. Like how quickly, what type of pitchers and what type of players adjust to the current state of things more quickly than others. And I agree with you that a guy like Verlander would seem like the right kind of guy to do it. I think, you know, Zach Greinke is trying to do it. I just don't think he's got the stuff anymore to make it happen. You know, like he's getting by with striking out a guy every other week or whatever. But he doesn't still have the raw stuff where I think, you know, at least Verlander still got the velocity if he doesn't quite have the rise. And as I said, the Astros are, you know, moments away from tying for first place. And as we've said, for maybe the last 3 years, people seem to be down on them coming in each winter and they still end up being good. And if you look at their rotation, Verlander's been great. Framber Valdez has been very good. Luis Garcia, even Jake Odorizzi has been pretty good. Yeah, Christian Javier, who I've always liked. And the offense, you know, Kyle Tucker looks great. And Yordan Alvarez might win an MVP. This team is still so good. And I think everybody still wants Dusty Baker to do great things. All right, let's go from, Brent Strom's former team to Brent Strom's current team. Brent Strom was the longtime pitching coach of Houston. He was credited for a lot of the advancements they'd made on the pitching side. He's in his 70s now, and he decided to retire. And I believe he's a resident of Tucson, Arizona, and was going to retire there and to his beach house in Mexico. And the Diamondbacks called him and said, please come help us, please. And he said, okay, I'll hold off on retirement. Well, look at what the Diamondbacks have done. Their rotation ERA of 243 is second only to the Dodgers, who have a 178, which is a whole other thing, which is wild. The Diamondbacks last year lost 110 games. They had the worst ERA in baseball. They were tied for the worst strikeout rate in baseball. They allowed the sixth most home runs in baseball. They were just a genuinely bad pitching team. And they didn't really change a lot. Like, they signed, you know, Mark Melanson, who has not actually been that good, made some minor moves, but the rotation is, you know, more or less what it was with Zach Davies now. You know, Merrill Kelly, Madison Bumgarner, Zach Gallen. And this was detailed pretty well by Tom Verducci in a piece at Sports Illustrated. Strom came in and he's like, hey, well, wait a minute. You guys don't elevate your fastballs. And, you know, you pitch in a way that seems to be charitably out of date, right? And if you look at the starters, and part of this is just better health, the starters have been amazing. And there's really interesting reasons why. Like, Merrill Kelly's changeup is moving like way more than it ever did. And he's got a 171 ERA. Zach Gallen, who I think you and I have both been a big fan of for a while, has added velocity. He's added changeup movement. He's throwing his four seam higher a lot. Last year he threw his four seam, you know, a high percentage of four seam fastballs at 42%. Now it's 55%. He's not walking anybody. Bumgarner, I want to say I believe he's got a 178 ERA, and that's great. But when your strikeouts are down and your walks are up, I'm not sure I'm buying that. But he's using his cutter a lot more, and it's being thrown harder. And I wonder if there's a scenario where somebody trades for him. But, you know, when you're not striking people out at all, I worry. But anyway, it's cool that we're talking about the Diamondbacks, because I just feel like we never talk about them positively or negatively. We just sort of ignore them more than any other team in baseball, I think. And they are right now 17-15, even though they can't hit. And a lot of that, I think, is due to this pretty cool pitching staff.
For sure. I love Zach Gallen, one of my favorites. He's been great this year. The offense, as you noted, has not been good, but they've had a couple guys there. Actually, I was reading a piece, you know, Sarah said last week about sort of like hitters. He kind of did a deep dive on hitters who have sort of had the biggest gap between their expected stats and their actual stats, and like what they're doing right and like to keep an eye on. And one of the guys he mentioned was Christian Walker, who's actually been hitting the ball really well recently. He's now got his expected slugging up to 625. So he's interesting. Dalton Varsho is interesting mainly because he's can play catcher in center field. But like, I like Pavin Smith. He hits the ball hard. So it's not a great lineup by any stretch, but I think it's better than it showed. Ketel Marte has started to show signs of life. They're pesky. I mean, they've actually been pretty pesky for years. I mean, last year just was a disaster, but they have a pretty good track record of sort of overachieving. The problem is they've overachieved and like, oh, people expected them to win 75 games. They won 83 games, right? So it's like, it hasn't really led to playoffs or like much glory, but they've been like a pesky team in the Mike Hazen era. And now that they have Strom, who seems to be having an impact on the pitching staff, like, I'm not entirely surprised to see this. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think that they're a team that is going to give, you know, maybe a very good spoiler 500, 80, 85 win type of team.
They promoted Elek with a K Thomas, who is one of their top prospects, who is an outfielder, and he has had a pretty good impact. He hit his first home run the other day. And he is their number one prospect at MLB Pipeline. Their number two prospect is also an outfielder, who is Corbin Carroll, who's maybe an extra year away. And they've got like a decent farm system, right? So like, brighter days are ahead, yes. And they did sign Ketel Marte to a long-term contract, which is great. I guess where I'm struggling a little bit is like, what is the path forward here for them? You know, like, I generally like the things they do. I'm willing to look past last year because it just was a total mess for everybody. But they're in such a tough division, like with the Dodgers and the Padres and the Giants, that you need to do better than just move forward in a positive direction, you know? And I'm not sure what that path is. Like, it's a real challenge there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of like the it's not dissimilar from the AL East in that regard. I think the difference is that like where the AL East sort of has like, it's unclear kind of where, you know, it's hard for the Orioles because there's like those four teams ahead of them. At least the Diamondbacks, like the Rockies, are sort of have always kind of given them one team they know they feel like they can be consistently better than and have sort of outperformed, you know, pretty consistently. So at least in that regard, that's okay. Now you're just looking ahead at the three teams. And right now, those three teams are three of like the most solid rosters in baseball. So it's definitely a tough spot for right now, but it doesn't feel necessarily insurmountable. But I got right now, it depends a lot on some of these prospects you talk about.
All right, I want to move on to our third thing, and this is just a deeply unfair thing. It should not be allowed to happen. Mike Trout is off to the best start of his career. Mike Trout is hitting .337, a .462 on base, and a .726 slugging percentage. Now, if you think about the all-time elite high levels of success that Mike Trout has played to over his career, And then you say to yourself, oh, there's more in there. He is going to raise his game. And then on top of that, to do it in a year where it's been harder than pretty much ever to hit for power, that's what he's doing. So he has his best ever OPS by 100 points, right? His OPS right now, this is a real number, 1188. That's 100 points better. And I get it. I'm comparing a partial season to a full season, but just bear with me here. Now, when you think about the fact he's got his best ever OPS in a year where the league average OPS is lower than it's been in forever, and you turn that into OPS plus, which compares to league average for that season, right? 100 being league average. His OPS plus is 250. He is 2.5 times better than the league average hitter. For context, the best seasons ever, the top six seasons of all time, three of them are Barry Bonds, three of them are Babe Ruth, and that is pretty much it. Barry Bonds had three seasons of 268, 263, and 259. Babe Ruth had one in 1920 that was 255. A fun trivia question is that Babe Ruth's 1927 was not his best season, wasn't even his second best season. And then you have Mike Trout. Now, do I really think he's going to have a 250 OPS all season long? No. But here's what I do believe, right? I do believe offense for the entire season will be down compared to what we've seen in the recent past. And I do believe that if he stays healthy, which is giant neon lights if, given the last couple of years, he could have a really good season by Mike Trout standards. And when you combine those two things, a great Mike Trout year and a really depressed MLB offensive year, it's not like being hyperbolic or being clickbaity to say he could have a season that, based on these rate metrics, would be one of the best we've ever seen. If there's anybody who's going to say, I don't care what the ball is doing, I'm still going to murder it, Mike Trout. Mike Trout is that guy. Why are the Angels good? Mike Trout is healthy and killing the ball. I love it.
That's the craziest thing about Mike Trout's career, is that as good as he's been, like, you know, all-time great, inner circle, future Hall of Famer, three-time MVP, arguably could have had like seven MVPs. When you look at his stat page, there's not one season that stands out as like, oh, this is when it all came together, right? The closest is probably 2019, when he hit 45 home runs and had a, you know, 182 OPS plus, but he only played 134 games. So he actually missed a lot of time. That's why he's never had a 50 home run season. He missed 28 games that year, right? His best like years by OPS plus are years where he missed at least 22 games. So he has never had the season where he like put it all together and played 150 plus games and got to 50 home runs. So like this, you know, again, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So that's like the big question for this year. But there's, in my mind, I'm thinking, is this the year? Is this the 155 games played, you know, 330, 460, 700, 55 home runs season? Because that's what I want to see. I want to see the one that we look back on and we say, like, as great as his career was, like, this was the year, right? Like, this is like, no question, this was it. And like, I don't want to say it's the last best chance for it to happen, but it is his age 30 season. And so it feels like this is the time.
Yeah, I think for me, that year for him was one of his first 2 years, because when he first came up, right, he was a base stealer, still 49 bases his first full season, 33 the second season, and he was playing elite center field defense. And he's more of a decent center fielder now as he's gotten older and slowed down. It's funny because you kind of mentioned like guys who've had that year. And I think of Bryce Harper's 2015, and I think of Mookie Betts as 2018. And obviously they've had other very good years, but not like that year. And then you look at Mike Trout and it's like, well, the problem with that is he just has that year every single year. So it's hard. It's hard to pop that up. But I wanted to know.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I wanted to know, like, how is he doing this? Like, you know, there are a lot of guys out there who have long and accomplished track records who are having a lot of trouble hitting for power or success this year. How is he not only hitting well, but like better than ever? And it kind of comes down to just barrel rates. So barrels are a type of batted ball that have the perfect combination of exit velocity and launch angle. Hit the ball hard is good. Hit the ball hard in the air is better. He's usually, you know, in the 15% or 18%, you know, per batted ball, right? Like 15 to 18% of his batted balls are what you would call these barrels. This year, it's 27%. He has dropped his ground ball rate by a ton. He's upped his fly ball rate by a ton. And he's continuing to hit, you know, with elite hard hit rates. And he's also dropped his strikeout rate from last year. I mean, that's how you do it. And if you remember last year before he got hurt, got off to this wild start, and you could look at it and say, listen, even by Mike Trout standards, he cannot keep this up because he had a batting average on balls in play of like 450, which you just can't do. This year it's 390, which is still, you know, maybe a little on the higher side, but his career mark is 350, so it's not that nuts. And I kind of think, like, if he has figured out a way to succeed in the baseball world of 2022, then the only thing holding him back is health. And as you kind of said, that has been the issue for the last couple of years. You know, he hasn't played 150 games since 2016.
That 2016 season feels quaint now in comparison. That was the year when he won MVP while hitting just 29 home runs, which almost feels hard to believe.
Oh, is that all?
But he still had a baseball reference war above 10. But it's just looking at his stat page, it stands out. It's like, really? He won MVP? Like, for all the years where Mike Trout was like, feels like he should have been MVP and didn't win it, it's like he won it when he only hit 29 home runs. He did have 10 war per baseball reference. So it wasn't like he had a bad year, but it's just funny to see in retrospect.
And the other thing that stands out to me too is he is actually underperforming his expected stats, you know, like the Statcast metrics. And I know lots of guys are this year because they're not getting the production out of the ball you'd think. But when you get off to a start like he has, I looked at it and I said, well, he must be getting lucky, right? Nope. We will take a quick break. We'll be back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast with a pair of guys that you should be talking about more. We're back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. As I said at the very top of the show, I don't think I have ever been so excited to get into my guy, the guy you should talk about more. And Matt, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think I've ever done a minor leaguer before, or at least a guy who had not played in the big leagues before. I'm so excited to tell you all about Vinny Pasquantino. Yes. Okay. Vinny Pasquantino is a 24-year-old first baseman for Kansas City's AAA affiliate in Omaha. Go Storm Chasers. He was an 11th round pick in 2019 out of Old Dominion. He is not even the most famous first baseman on the Storm Chasers because they also have top prospect Nick Prado there. So Vinny has been playing DH for a while, and he's off to a really good start, right? 386 on base, 544 slugging percentage, 7 home runs. Here's the key, 20 walks and only 16 strikeouts. And at this point, you're saying, Mike, there's like 800 big leaguers. Why are we talking about Vinny Pasquantino? Let me take you back briefly to 2019. You may remember Mike Tauchman had this out of nowhere year for the Yankees, and people were like, oh, who's this guy? How did they find him? So I came up with kind of a junk stat. I did what you shouldn't ever do, which is scout the minor league stat lines, because I wanted to look. I came up with this sort of silly metric that just looked at combinations of power, slugging, but mostly like having a great eye, like walks more than strikeouts. And it had to be for guys who were at least under 30. I wasn't looking for like 35-year-old quad A veterans. And when I did that, over the previous 10 years, I found like 10 guys had done it. A couple of them were stars, Goldschmidt, Mookie Betts, Rhys Hoskins. Most of the other guys didn't make it because of injury problems. And at the time, one of the guys I popped was Connor Joe, which is working out real well for me. I'm excited about that. Anyway, there was no minor league season in 2020. And before this year started, I was thinking about that because Connor Joe was going to be playing for the Rockies. And I said, oh, hey, that I should go back and look at 2021 and see if anybody last year fulfilled these requirements. And it turns out two guys did. One of them is Adley Rutschman, who's the consensus top prospect in baseball. And the other one is Vinny Pasquantino. So I said to myself, well, wait a minute. We got an Italian guy whose last name ends in O, and he's doing this. Well, I'm going to have to pay attention to him. And as I just said, he's off to a really good start. And so not only have I been excited to see, you know, him validate this junk metric I came up with, I have just full of questions for Kansas City. Who's playing first base for the Royals right now? Carlos Santana is 36. He's not hit in 2 years and he's out with an injured ankle. Ryan O'Hearn, I guess this is 2 days old. I didn't update it this morning, but at the time he had an OPS plus of 0. That's right, 0. And Hunter Dozier, who's been fine, but he also plays third base, left field, right field. My point is, no one is blocking Vinny Pasquantino. Bring the man up, let him play. And if you're not going to do it, trade him to the Yankees, let him play with Rizzo and Gallo. We here in New York, we like our Italians. Bring Vinny up.
I always sort of like shake my head when you bring up these guys, but your tried and true fake stat has revealed some very interesting names.
So good.
I love a good junk stat that kind of leads to some, good conversation starter. And He's interesting. I'm now invested. I want to see him. He will be a fan. He will be a fan favorite, if nothing else, but for the name. It brings back memory of. Do you remember Val Pascucci?
I do.
Yes. Same initials too. And Val Pascucci was like an early internet baseball favorite because he was like this guy who was he was 6'6", 265 pounds, and he just put up crazy minor league numbers. And then he went to Japan and he raked, but like he could barely ever get a chance in the majors because no one really believed it would translate. But like his minor league stat lines were often incredible. So that's who I'm reminded of is Val Pascucci. The guy I'm going to talk about is actually a major leaguer and is also a first baseman and also plays in the American League Central, and that's Josh Naylor. Josh Naylor got some pub this week because on Monday night in a huge comeback win against the White Sox, he became the first player in recorded history to have 8 RBIs from the 8th inning on in a crazy comeback win. And then also because he went absolutely bananas after his go-ahead 3-run homer in the 11th inning, and some fan captured it on video right behind the Guardians dugout of just Naylor going bananas celebrating with his teammates. But it wasn't just one game. He's hitting .347, .377, .611 on the season with a .191 OPS plus. And he's 90th percentile or better in expected weight on base, expected batting average, expected slugging, and in strikeout rate. He's actually kind of an interesting profile in that he's like kind of a slugger, but he doesn't really strike out and he doesn't walk a lot either, which is like kind of a profile you don't see a lot of. He doesn't wear batting gloves, which is also cool. And so, you know, going into the year, there was like, how are the Guardians going to score runs? And I was skeptical, and their offense has been way better than I expected. And, you know, Owen Miller has been part of the reason why. Stephen Kwan was a reason early why. Andrés Giménez has been very good. But Josh Naylor, who's been playing first base for them, has been as much of a reason as any of those guys. And the thing about Naylor, too, is that like, he's not like an out-of-nowhere guy. He was actually the 12th overall pick in the 2015 draft, originally drafted by the Marlins, which I had totally forgotten about until I started to do a deep dive on him. And he's got like – he's from – I can't even pronounce this – Mississauga, Ontario. He's Canadian.
Mississauga, just west of Toronto.
There you go. And he's been traded twice. The first time was in the trade deadline in 2016, where he was part of that like crazy like – weird trade where he was traded by the Marlins with, and you ready to remember some guys?
Oh, we had fun this morning looking at this one.
With Carter Capps, Luis Castillo, and Jared Cozart to the Padres for Andrew Cashner, Teyron Guerrero, Colin Ray, and Cash. And for those who remember, this was the crazy trade where it turned out that Colin Ray was actually hurt. And so like the Marlins called foul, so they traded him back to the Padres and got Luis Castillo back before then subsequently trading him to the Reds. And in addition to that, Teyron Guerrero was like one of our guys for a while. Mike used to love him because he like threw 102 miles an hour.
And I looked it up, by the way. I was wrong. It's Teyron Guerrero. Sorry, Teyron.
And there was also Carter Capps, who was another one of the early StatCast guys because he was the guy who like almost did like a hop step when he pitched so that like he was actually releasing the ball like, you know, while most pitchers release at what, like 60, you know, like 56 feet from home plate. He was releasing it like 54 feet from home plate or whatever. And it was like he was like there was questions about whether or not his delivery was even legal. So that trade is just like wild in retrospect. And then Naylor was traded again in 2020 during the pandemic shortened season at that trade deadline. He was traded by the Padres with Joey Cantillo, Gabriel Arias, Austin Hedges, Cal Contrell, and Owen Miller, mind you, from the Padres to the Indians, now Guardians, for a player to be named later, Greg Allen, and Mike Clevinger. So he was in the Mike Clevinger trade. So this is just like he's got like a crazy trade tree. His brother, younger brother, Bo, who is also a first-round pick of the Guardians, has a .411 OBP in AA, so we could have a brother combination in Cleveland very soon. Josh Naylor, now one of my new favorite players.
Yeah, I was reading about that game the other night. What did you say? 8 RBIs after the 8th inning? And I think my favorite stat that came up of all that is, if you go back through all of baseball history, the man with the most RBIs ever is unsurprisingly Henry Aaron, right? Henry Aaron had 2,297 RBIs. He never in his entire life had a game with 8 RBIs in a game. And Josh Naylor did it after the 8th inning. And it's kind of cool to see him succeed because what I remember him from mostly, this is like 72 hours worth of baseball, is the 2020 wild card, which was a series that year against the Yankees. If you remember, he went off, right? Just like looked like the best hitter on the face of the planet. And a lot of people were like, well, that's kind of cool. Can he bring that into next year? And, you know, he didn't really. Last year wasn't like a great year for him. But it's important to remember he is only 24 years old. He doesn't even turn 25 until next month. You know, there's like lots of time for him to succeed here. And I do feel like the Guardians deserve a deeper dive on our part, because I don't really believe in the offense like that much, because they've got a lot of guys who are great at making contact, and I don't think they've got a ton of power, Naylor aside, you know, like Kwan for sure, Miles Straw. But I'm starting to come around to the idea that if this is what the season is going to look like, you know, in terms of offense, that maybe they have backed into the exact right time to do it. Like, this offense in 2019 gets absolutely slaughtered. And they did. We saw it. They were terrible, you know. But they may have backed into the right strategy for 2022. And whether that's intentionally or just dumb luck, I think that's kind of a fun story to keep in mind.
I think that's a really interesting question, because like, there are some teams that have, you know, maybe constructed rosters for this season. And I don't want to say like give them too much credit, but like, we knew that like the humidors were coming to all 30 parks. And we knew that like there was, you know, issues with two different batches of balls last year, and that like this season was going to be exclusively like this other batch of balls that was probably going to be less, you know, less carry. So like, teams knew that, and there was probably ways for teams to sort of like game that out this offseason and try and, you know, build rosters with that in mind. Like, it still doesn't excuse the Guardians from basically like not trying to like get a more acquire more established talent when they had the opportunity to. To be clear, I'm not saying that like, ooh, they outsmarted everyone by like doing nothing, but like, it is possible that like in making moves around the edges and sort of like, you know, hey, we're going to make sure Naylor's starting and Owen Miller, and like, we think and Stephen Kwan that can be like useful major leaguers or to good major leaguers, that like they were gaming all of this out, and this was like by design.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then my counterfactual to that is, because like, I agree with you, but if you look at so Cleveland has the tied for second lowest strikeout rate. They're making a ton of contact. The team with the lowest strikeout rate, the Kansas City Royals, who have been terrible. You've got to have contact that's, you know, decent contact, which kind of brings us full circle. Bring up Vinny Pasquantino. Make sure it happens by the next time we've had our podcast. I would appreciate that very much. That will do it for this week's podcast. Don't miss an episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening to the Ballpark Dimensions podcast. We'll see you next week.